From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got a great show ahead for you today, and I think that we'll be talking about people on the path to sainthood, like we like to do a lot on this program. And we're also going to be talking about Marian apparitions, and we won't be covering any of the specific apparitions that we have in the past. Instead, we're going to be looking at them from a different angle. We're going to be speaking with Matt Lorenz, who's a board game designer who has released a new board game related to Marian apparitions. So perhaps this is a fun way for you and your family to get to know these incredible moments that the Mother of God has walked amongst us. So we'll be excited to talk to Matt later in today's program. And check out my series, They Might Be Saints. We'll be looking at the life of Father Al Schwartz, Father Aloysius Schwartz, as his full name is. And we'll be looking at him as a candidate for canonization. He dedicated his life working with the poorest of the poor, establishing young youth programs and founding religious orders that still serve his worldwide mission long after his death. And I was able to visit one of those places in Mexico, Chalco in Mexico, a few years back to film this episode. And what an incredible work, the work of Father Al Schwartz. So encourage people to learn more about this incredible future saint by tuning in on Wednesday, June 26th at 8 a.m. Central Time on EWTN Television. And also, you can check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, my travel show. I go to Banu, which is, I'll be investigating a stunning Marian apparition in Belgium in 1932. 11-year-old Mariette Beko witnessed 8 visions of the Virgin of the Poor, who promised to intercede for the poor, sick, and suffering. And that'll be on June 29th at 6 p.m. Central Time. Check that one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Now let's take a look later in the show. Our schedule coming up, we'll be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. Every week we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different day around the calendar year that lines up exactly to the title of Mary. And so on June 24th, we've got Our Lady of the Ship from Chioggia in Italy in the year 1508. The might-be saint of the day is Blessed Theodgar of Westervig. You guessed it, he's from Germany. He died in the year 1065. And the question of the week, why are most saints priests or nuns? Are they holier than the rest of us? Well, I'll try to answer that question in just a little bit. In the miracle of the day on June 24th in 1652, from La Trinité in France, there was a miraculous statue that I'll be telling you about in just a little bit. Speaking of miraculous statues, each week we try to talk about miracle news happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And there are these things that pop up once in a while, and very few of them are actually true cases of miracles, but there are claims of weeping or crying statues all around the world. And there's one that has been just surfaced in the media, crying tears of blood with divine messages. And so there's a statue which is shown to be Our Lady of Guadalupe that's been appearing to cry blood for a while in Morelia, in the town of Obrera, in the state of Michoacán in Mexico. And the owners, who were startled, they were a family in Morelia, in the town of Obrera, in the state of Michoacán. They contacted Catholic officials when apparently this statue started to shed dark red tears from its eyes on June 2nd. And the exact location of the statue has not been made public yet, presumably to protect the safety of the family involved. And photographs of the statue appear to show dark streaks running down the cheeks as if it had been crying blood. And this sign is thought to be a divine message for believers, but it's going to undergo extensive investigation, we think, as local church officials have now urged those people at that parish to not get carried away. And the Archdiocese of Morelia said in a statement, "It is necessary to highlight the need for caution when approaching an issue as delicate as that of an alleged miracle," end quote.
And this in no way confirms anything in this regard, which is why he himself asked to treat the issue with adequate discretion while inviting them to take advantage of this moment to motivate their own conversion and family prayer. Quote, it will be the ecclesiastical hierarchy itself that confirms the team that will carry out the detailed study of the case. So as soon as there is any relevant report or conclusion, it will be made public knowledge, end quote. So we'll follow this one for you in Morelia in Mexico. If there's some sort of a positive judgment or an ongoing case, we'll be sure to report that. And of course, if we find out that it is proof positive as not true tears of blood, or if we find it to be a hoax, we'll report on that as well. But that's the latest of the weeping statues around the world that we have now in Mexico. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question, give out a prize, the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary. And the question from last week, who was the earliest born American to be declared blessed who hasn't yet been moved to saint? And that answer is Teresa Demjanovich, or Miriam Teresa Demjanovich, who lived from 1901 to 1927. She was a professed religious of the Sisters of Charity of St. Elizabeth in New Jersey, and she was declared venerable in 2012 on May 10th, beatified in 2014 by Cardinal Angelo Amato. I went there to film an episode of They Might Be Saints, and we looked at the miracle related to Michael Mentzer, the boy whose eyesight returned when it was compromised by macular degeneration. It was absolutely an amazing miracle that led to that beatification. She has not been yet moved to the status of saint, and so she's the answer to the question, who is the earliest born American who has not yet been moved to saint? So we continue to pray that her cause moves along to the next step. This week's question relates to Marian apparitions. In the general Roman calendar, we have Our Lady of Lourdes, Our Lady of Fatima, and Our Lady of Guadalupe as actual feast days on that calendar. The question is, what is the fourth apparition-related Marian feast day in the general Roman calendar? If you think you know that answer, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and maybe you'll be the one with the fastest answer. Answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Venerable Mother Mary Ling, and we'll be finding out if there are any miracles that are attributed to her intercession. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about saints, and in particular, future American saints. And we have had a number of people who have been added to that very short list of venerables from the United States. By my numbers, we have something like 26 people in the history of the United States who have either been born or died, or born and died in the United States. So it's a very small number when you consider the entirety of the history of the United States. And just around this time last year, we had the announcement coming out of Rome of Mother Mary Ling being declared venerable by Rome. That was the establishment of her life of heroic virtue after the examination of her positio, or position paper, that's submitted by the cause to Rome, and she has been declared venerable. So she is one of the very latest in this short list of Americans who have been honored in this way and recognized as being on the path to sainthood. We're so grateful today to be joined by Sister Marcia Hall from the Cause for Mother Mary Ling to talk to us about the incredible life of virtue, and she'll give us some of the reasons why we can find inspiration in the life of Mother. Welcome back to the program today, Sister Marcia Hall.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to talk with you again, and I think that, as I mentioned, it's a very small list of people who have been declared venerable in the history of the United States, and one of the people who has been declared venerable at this time last year was the foundress of your religious congregation. Tell us a little bit about who was the woman, Mary Elizabeth Lang.
Well, she was born Elizabeth Clarissa Lang around 1794. We don't know exactly the exact date. And she was born in a French-speaking community in Santiago de Cuba. So the theory is that her parents fled Haiti and went to Cuba, why it was a French-speaking community. So actually her first language was French, and her second language was Spanish. English, the distant third by the time she came to the United States and founded the community. So she came here in the early 1800s. We're not sure why. And she eventually settled in the Fells Point area of Baltimore in the early 18-teens. In Baltimore, there was a sizable San Domingan refugee community, which was both Catholic and French-speaking. So, of course, she felt at home with them. And when I say San Domingue, that's what Haiti was called at that time. So her early years in Baltimore, she started a school in her home, maybe for about 10 years, not quite sure how long. She also worshipped in the lower chapel of St. Mary's Seminary, where she probably crossed paths with Elizabeth Ann Seton because she worshipped there as well. And we know she also belonged to two devotional societies. So she was a very devout person who wanted to be of service to the community. So about 1828, Father Joubert comes knocking on her door, literally. He had become the director of the religious education program for the San Domingan community at St. Mary's and was struggling. And so Father Tessier, who was Elizabeth's spiritual director, said, "I know just the person you need to talk with." And so he sends him to meet Elizabeth, and he talks about his desire to start a permanent school for the children, and she shares with him her desire to become a sister. So he goes to the Archbishop, Archbishop Whitfield, and the Archbishop gives his permission for both the school and the religious community. So the school was founded in June of 1828 and was called the St. Francis School for Colored Girls, and is still in existence today, known as St. Francis Academy. And she, two of her friends, and one of her students started what we would call formation, started preparing themselves to become sisters. And so on July 2nd, 1829, the four of them made their vows in front of Father Joubert in the chapel of the convent. So in a few years, we'll be 200 years old.
That is amazing. We're talking today with Sister Marcia Hall about the cause for the canonization of Mother Mary Lang, who's a venerable in our Catholic Church. And what kind of challenges did Mother Mary have in launching this new order? You said she joined with three other women, some of her friends. They took their vows. What challenges were in front of them in starting this new community?
Well, before they actually took their vows, this is in an excerpt from Father Joubert's diary, they expressed their concerns, being women of color, and how they would be perceived and received in the larger community. And so he went to the Archbishop, and the Archbishop said, "You know, I understand their concerns, but tell them to move ahead, that the finger of God is in this." So they were concerned from the beginning, knowing that they were in a slave state, that black women were not perceived or received as virtuous women, as women of virtue. And so that was their initial concern. How do we sort of get past this? But she never let any of that stop her. She moved ahead. Secondly, starting a school for black girls, so some of the parents had the money to send their children to the school and others didn't. And the sisters decided, well, whoever wants to come, we will take them. So finances were always an issue. Moreover, from the beginning, the sisters welcomed children into the convent. They were called children of the house. And so they were responsible not only for their own well-being, but for the well-being of the children who lived with them. So there were times when they were making vestments, when they were part of the housekeeping staff at St. Mary's to keep themselves going as well as the children under their care. So those were finances and the racism of the day were the main issues that they faced.
And at that time, as far as I've read, there was a cholera outbreak as well at that time. Talk about how Sister Mary, or later Mother Mary, was one of the people who cared for those people during that epidemic.
The cholera epidemic was in 1832, and two officials came to see Father Joubert and asked if the sisters would be willing to nurse patients in the almshouse. And his response was, well, they are teachers, not nurses, but I will put this before them. So he did, and all of them, I believe there were 11 at the time, said they were willing to do it. And Mother Mary was one of the four who went. They weren't there very long, but they were there and came back healthy and whole. However, Sister Anthony Duchemin was asked at a later point to nurse the Archbishop who took sick and then to nurse the Archbishop's housekeeper. So she eventually died of cholera.
And for those people who have advanced the cause of Mother Mary Lang, and now we see around this time last year, we see her having been recognized as a venerable, which means that her life of heroic virtue has been established and recognized by Rome. What are some of the virtues that we see playing out in the life of Mother Mary Lang, both in caring for those sick people and in other forms of service as a sister? What are the virtues that Rome has recognized in their formal declaration?
I would say she was a courageous woman. She was a woman of deep faith. She had to step out on faith to leave her home country, come to a country where she didn't speak the language, and eventually found or co-found two institutions. I mean, that takes a lot of courage when you don't really speak the language. And initially when she came, I mean, she made sure she found a church home and two devotional societies. So she was a very devout person, a woman of faith. She relied strongly on God's providence. So I would say a faith-filled person, a faithful person, and a courageous person. Those are some of the virtues that I look to. Also a person who was about giving service. It's not about me. It's about the needs of the people in front of me. What are their needs? Well, here are these children who aren't being educated. I can help with that. How can we further that? A religious community. Okay, I want to be a part of that. So a faithful person, a person who prayed to know what God's will was for her, and she stepped out on faith and followed God's will.
Beautiful. We've been talking today with Sister Marcia Hall from the Cause for Canonization for Mother Mary Lang, and her legacy lives on. I think that through your order, which is thriving today, and also the schools that she's founded. Talk a little bit about how the memory and impact of Mother Mary Lang lives on even today.
Well, this was really after Mother Lang had passed away, but eventually the sisters were called to mission all across the country. So we went as far west as Kansas, as far north as Buffalo, New York, and as far south as Cuba. So there are probably thousands of people who can talk about the Oblates having formed them, having educated them. I myself was, believe it or not, in the cleaners about 3 weeks ago, came to pick up something, and this man came over to me and actually handed the clerk some money. And she was like, no. And he said, no, I'm going to pay for what she's getting. She doesn't know me. He told me his name and said that he had been sent to North Carolina when he was a child and had been educated by one of our sisters. And she had made him the person he was. Without her, he would not have been the person he was. I had never seen that man before and may never see him again.
Wow.
So the impact of mother lying in terms of educating the whole child, meeting people where they are, meeting their needs, that still flows through the Oblate Sisters of Providence. We have a newly professed sister. She's been professed, I think, about 2 years now, who's from Ghana, and she has a whole program where she sends rosaries to her home country, where they're building a home for the elderly. So she also has imbibed that spirit of Mother Lang, being of service, meeting people's needs. So that continues to this day.
Wonderful. And her canonization cause marches along. She's currently at the status of Venerable, which is the second stop in the path to sainthood, servant of God, Venerable. The next step would be Blessed. And in order for that to happen, a miracle would need to be found through the singular intercession of Mother Mary Lang. And we're talking about, most typically, a medical healing, a serious condition not liable to go on its own. It must be an instantaneous, complete, and lasting cure, and no medical treatment given towards that cure, most typically. So it's very difficult to find a miracle. How has it gone in the search for intercessory miracles that will move Mother Mary Lang along to the next step in the sainthood cause?
There is no miracle out there, or let me say that no miracle has been sent in that's being investigated at the current time. Now, perhaps if someone out there is listening and say, oh, I can attest to something, and that may start the process. But at this time, there is nothing in front of us. There's nothing that's being investigated. So the primary responsibility of the Guild and everyone else is to get Mother Lang's name out there, make sure people know who she is, who she was, what she was about, and how they can help the cause.
Wonderful. And for people who want to find out more about her life and perhaps find an intercessory prayer to pray for their own healings or miracles or intercessions, what is the best website or other place that people can go for this information?
There is the motherlang.org website, which is the Guild. The Guild is the organization whose responsibility is to promote the cause. So they can find the prayer there. They can also find more about the history of the community if they go to oblatesisters.com. The history is there, and more current events are on that website. If they are looking for a speaker to come, or some kind of Zoom presentation, or if they want prayer cards, for example, if they want prayer cards, they can contact Sister Magdala Marie Gilbert at the Guild office, or they can contact me if they're looking for a speaker.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Marcia Hall, for talking to us about the cause for canonization for Venerable Mother Mary Lang, and we wish you all the best, and we'll be praying for Mother Mary to be moving along on that path to sainthood. It's all in God's time when that miracle will show itself, but we pray that one comes your way soon. Thank you so much, Sister Marcia Hall, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you for having me.
God bless. That was Sister Marcia Hall talking to us about Venerable Mother Mary Lang, an incredible life and one that people need to get to know. And of course, someday we hope to feature her on the series They Might Be Saints on EWTN to share her life with the EWTN audience as well. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. on The Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world about questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting the email questions, of course. I've got perhaps the strangest inbox of anybody you've ever met. I've got a lot of interesting things coming my way. But I also love answering questions when I give presentations. So I travel around the country, maybe give 20 presentations a year at different Catholic parishes, shrines, or conferences. And I give a presentation for 45 minutes these days. I've been speaking a lot about Eucharistic miracles because we're in this time of Eucharistic revival here in our church in the United States. And so I've been talking a lot about Eucharistic miracles, and I'll answer questions for 15, 20, or longer, depending on how many questions people have about miracles. So for people who want to invite me to speak at their event, you can contact me through miraclehunter.com and click on the contact tab. You can send me a message that way. The question for this week is a good one. I get this one once in a while, and I think it's probably worth mentioning. The question of the week is from James. He says, "Dear Miracle Hunter, why are most saints priests or nuns? Are they holier than the rest of us? Thanks, James." Well, thanks, James, for your question, and it's a good one. And I think that if you look in the history of the Catholic Church, you will see that perhaps there have been as many as 10,000 saints canonized throughout Christian history. And a huge percentage of them, especially prior to this past century, have almost exclusively been priests or nuns. And is that discouraging news for the rest of us? Of course, there are a lot of people who are in heaven who are saints with a lowercase s, people who are there in the presence of God who haven't been formally recognized or canonized, you might say, by Rome. But what does that imply anyway if only priests or nuns are the ones who are getting getting that special golden ticket or that special recognition? And I think it's important not to get too bent out of shape out of this. Again, plenty of people go to heaven who aren't priests or nuns, but they're the ones who are recognized. And why is that? Well, I hate to put it this way, but a lot of things in life, maybe everything or just about everything, relates to money. When it comes to sainthood processes, those are expensive as well. And I know that Pope Francis has been doing what he can to sort of revise the costs for canonizations, but it seems that it's been as high as $250,000. Or more to get somebody from servant of God, venerable, blessed, and then saint. And why is that? Because of all the people who need to be involved, need to be hired to investigate the miracles, the doctors, the people who are the canon lawyers who are working on assembling all the information, running all the interviews, collecting the data, translating it into Italian and submitting it to Rome. The whole deal costs some money over the course of time. And so canonization causes are expensive. And so who has that kind of money, perhaps, to advance a cause along? And that is usually the congregation that a priest or a nun has belonged to. It's in the vested interest of each of these congregations to have one of their founders or members recognized as a saint. It draws attention to their congregation for sure, and so they might want to invest that money. But for the rest of us who don't necessarily have big donors or big funds hanging around to push us towards sainthood, we don't see too many lay saints these days. But that number is changing a little bit. I think in the last century, we see a shift from only religious saints to lay saints. We see more people coming forward to help with those canonization causes. So that's a little bit of a complicated answer to a question, but thanks, James, for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. For today, June 24th, we've got Our Lady of the Ship from Chioggia in Italy in the year 1508. And the story goes that historical records of the town of Chioggia recount a very gloomy afternoon on June 24th, 1508, when a violent storm broke out. The townspeople prayed desperately for the fishermen caught at sea, but only towards the evening did the storm subside. An old guard dejectedly came out of the lighthouse, and suddenly he heard a voice from the shore calling him. He turned and saw a majestic lady dressed in a black robe sitting on a trunk in a beechwood tree. The Mother of God said that she was deeply saddened by the sinful lives led by the people of Chioggia, and the hurricane was a warning of a worse cataclysm if people didn't repent. She called for a crusade of prayer and penance. On the site was quickly built a small chapel, and later a church. And that is Our Lady of the Ship from Chioggia in Italy in 1508. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to 365dayswithmary.com, or you can pick up the app, 365 Days with Mary Marian Calendar, on the iOS App Store, or you can connect to the Facebook page and join any of the 10,000 other followers who try to find a title of Mary in their Facebook page each and every day. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. This is something we've been doing for this year in 2024. We have an anniversary of a miracle, June 24th, 1652, from La Trinité in France, Our Lady of Lagge. And so a fervent priest, Father Jacques Figiera, he found the chapel of Lagge in a sad state of disrepair and decided to intervene. In 1628, Father Figiera, he had the roof rebuilt, the walls whitewashed, the ground was made even, proper door with a lock was installed, and he kept the keys on himself at all times. He also had the path of ease that led to Lagge made like new. He did all this at his own expense in honor of God and the Virgin Mary. Then he announced that a nearby population that all this, the Chapel of Light was restored, that he would ensure all services, a task that he fulfilled without any compensation for 25 years, and the inhabitants of Villefranche had gone to the chapel before it was profaned and started coming back. And the Lord, through Our Lady, answered the trusting prayers of the faithful, encouraged by the pastor. And the Virgin showed her goodness by giving many miracles there, and people came to pray. The Virgin of the Chapel from Piedmont, from faraway Liguria, in all corners of Provence. However, the statue was venerated there bore the marks of time and the harshness of the elements. So Father Figuera owned a beautiful statue of the Virgin and then placed on an altar of the Church of Ease. And in order to crown his work and prove his gratitude to Our Lady for the miracles granted, Father Figuera decided to donate the statue to the Chapel of Lagge. And on June 24th, 1652, the White Penitents of Ease carried the statue in procession all the way to Lagge. And since then, each year on the same date, the Parish of Ease renews this act of devotion by coming in pilgrimage to Lagge in procession from Ease carrying the statue of Our Lady. And the Bishop of Nice, Monsignor de Palaitis, applying the guidelines of the Council of Trent, undertook a serious investigation before he authorized the pilgrimage. Until the decision was made official, the statue had to be covered and the chapel was kept closed. Then a commission of theologians, assisted by a lawyer and doctor, were convened to examine the facts of Lagge, while the bishop himself visited the village to form his own opinion of the behavior of the pilgrims. And in December of 1653, this commission confirmed the authenticity of the miracles of the bishop, who authorized and encouraged the devotion to Our Lady of Lagge. On April 25th, 1654, he presided at the first official pilgrimage to Lagge. And that is the miracle of the day relating to Our Lady of Lagge in France, La Trinité, on June 24th, 1652. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. So we always try to keep you up to date on the sainthood news, people who are coming down the pipeline. And big news coming out of Champion, Wisconsin. The U.S. bishops voted to take the first steps towards declaring Brown County's Adele Bryce a saint. And so U.S. Catholic bishops are beginning the process of officially proclaiming a 19th century Brown County woman a saint. This is an article coming to us out of Wisconsin, of course. It is in a unanimous vote on Friday. The bishops approved the advancement of the cause of the beatification and canonization of Adele Bryce. Bryce was an immigrant from Belgium who settled with her family near present-day Champion. In 1859, when she was 28 years old, Bryce witnessed the first and only approved Marian apparition, a reported supernatural appearance of the Virgin Mary in the United States. Bryce is said to have seen Mary three times, and on the third occasion, Mary instructed Bryce to start her mission to become a teacher for the Lord and the Blessed Lady, end quote. And Bryce's father built a small family chapel soon after the apparitions, and today the chapel's grounds are known as the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion, attracting hundreds of thousands of people from all over the world each year to visit this apparition site of the Virgin Mary. So big news coming out of Champion. We might see another visionary in our church recognized as a saint sometime soon, and another American recognized as a saint. So stay tuned for that. Let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We do this every week where we talk about the person on the path to sainthood whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly to the day's date. For today, we've got Blessed Theodgar of Westervig from Germany, who died in the year 1065. His feast day is June 24th. He was born in Thuringia in modern Germany, and he studied in England. He was a priest, a missionary to Norway. He was a courtier to King Olav Haraldsson II. He was known to heal the sick by praying over them. He went into exile in Sweden with King Olav in 1028, and he was a missionary to the area of Jutland in Denmark. He was making little headway until one morning a spring of fresh water began to flow from where he had slept the night before, and the locals knew a miracle when they saw it and began to take Theodgar's teachings more seriously. He built the first church in the region. And he died on June 24th in 1065 in Jutland of natural causes, and his relics were transferred to the Church of the Augustinian Abbey in Vestervig in Denmark on October 30th, 1117. 1117 was the year of that transfer. And so that is the Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Theodgar of Vestervig. With one more miracle, Theodgar will become Saint Theodgar of Vestervig. And if we are interested in watching They Might Be Saints on EWTN, it's every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Central Time. And on June 26th, the episode of They Might Be Saints is Father Aloysius Schwartz. He's a canonization candidate who dedicated his life to working with the poorest of the poor, establishing youth programs, and founding religious orders that still serve his worldwide mission long after his death. I've been to his place in Mexico, also place in Korea, Philippines, and other places around the world. Absolutely incredible life. Father Al Schwartz, check that one out, Wednesday, June 26th at 8 a.m. Central Time on EWTN Television. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Matt Lawrence, a board game designer who has a new offering related to Marian apparitions. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who know me know of my great interest in Marian apparitions, and perhaps that's what got me started with my website, miraclehunter.com, where I have as many as 2,500 Marian apparitions identified throughout church history. A much smaller number have been recognized, of course, by the church as being supernatural. But I always am drawn to this, despite the various other types of miracles that I investigate, healing miracles and Eucharistic miracles. Marian apparitions are always going to be the thing that first attracted me to miracles, perhaps through Our Lady of Guadalupe. And while apparitions and other miracles aren't essential for our faith, they certainly do inspire us, and they help us to draw closer to Christ and perhaps deepen our faith. And there are various ways, of course. We could read a website or read a book, but there are other ways, whether it's conversation or otherwise, that we can get to know Mary through her apparitions throughout Christian history. And one new way that I have just learned about is there's a brand new board game in the works that's coming to us from game designer Matt Lawrence. And he's putting together numerous board games with Catholic themes. Holy Quest is the name of one of them, and others related to Mary. And we're so excited today to be joined on the program today by this game designer, Matt Lawrence. Thank you so much, Matt. Welcome to the program today.
Hey, hi, how are you, Michael? It's very nice to be on your show, and I hope to present what I'm working on to your listeners. And so, I'm creating a whole bunch of different board games for Catholics. I guess it's on a larger scale, like nobody has done before. And my main focus is obviously on the saints, Mary and Jesus, and I'm actually incorporating my artwork, which I do as a digital photographer, into these board games directly. So the images in the games are actually coming from real photographs in real Catholic churches all around the world.
Oh, that's wonderful. And like I say, I think that people getting closer to Mary is a good thing. And whether it's through reading or even through a game, I think these are all good ways that people young and old can get to know Mary and her miracles as they've shaped our faith throughout the years. And so I think it's worth noting, Matt, that perhaps you didn't originally have this idea for a profession coming out to be a board game designer. That wasn't necessarily your path in life. We all have different paths where we work through the things of our lives, and then we end up being where we are. And I guess as my study of miracles is somewhat of a similar thing, where I started out in one occupation, then moved to this eventually over time. But you had sort of a different path, I would say, something that we wouldn't identify it as sort of a Catholic viewpoint, or you started off your career. You worked some years in Planned Parenthood, and then eventually your eyes opened to the realities there, and you moved on to develop board games and other things to help strengthen the faith. Talk a little bit about your experience with Planned Parenthood and how you at some point moved on from that to change your view.
Yeah, I mean, I spent probably close to about 10 years at the very headquarters of Planned Parenthood in Manhattan. So I was never directly exposed to the clinic environment, which is what they do across the country and the world. And I guess I, because of that lack of exposure to that, I was an IT professional working on mostly on their website at the time. And it was really my first corporate job after graduating from college. And at the time when I joined them, I didn't even realize who they are or what they do. I was always a Catholic, going to church on every Sunday. I wouldn't consider myself a great Catholic at that time, meaning that my faith wasn't really that strong, but I never actually stopped going to church on Sundays and things like that. So from that perspective, you know, if you ask me today, like, how did I end up at Planned Parenthood and why did I stay there for so long, I really don't have a good answer for that. I mean, I guess, you know, I had an interview with Abby Johnson on her podcast, and I mentioned the same thing where I just said, you know, I was just blind, you know, just didn't realize, you know, what kind of a company I'm working for, who they are, and what they really do. You know, I was never pro-abortion, or, you know, I was always pro-life. And even with all that, I still ended up working there. And for a very long time, I didn't realize who I'm really working for. So a time came at one point, probably about 2 years before I quit that job, that I realized, you know, I need to leave. But the incentives and things that they were offering, you know, very, very good perks and, you know, paternity leave, 3 months fully paid paternity leave, which is fairly uncommon in the United States. You know, all these things added up to, like, you know, if I leave, where am I going to go? How am I going to provide the amount of income for my family to sustain us and things like that? You know, all those things were kind of standing in the way. So it took me a while before I actually quit the job.
From going from working there, and you realized your conscience or otherwise just inspired you to that you needed to move on, how did you make the transition to go from the IT professional that you were there to turn your attention to developing board games and ways to draw people closer to the faith through the pursuit of fun?
Well, I was always into digital photography, so I used to travel quite a bit with my wife before we had children, and I would photograph landscapes and architecture and things like that, but never in the religious aspect. But over time, I developed a devotion to Our Lady, Mother of Jesus, Queen of Heaven and Earth, and I just, you know, I ended up actually consecrating myself to her, according to St. Louis de Montfort, and you know, one thing led to another. My parents actually bought a home upstate New York, or kind of like central New York, at a place called, very close to a place called Rosa Mystica House of Prayer, which is a place devoted to Mary based on her one of her apparitions from 1947 in Italy. And so my parents purchased a home there, and I would visit them, you know, a few times a year. And this is actually connected to St. Padre Pio a little bit as well. And long story short, I ended up purchasing a home right on a street by her name. So I actually live on a street called Rosa Mystica Drive, which is pretty awesome. And I moved there because of Our Lady. and I started applying my digital photography and editing skills to creating some Catholic holy artwork, first of which was an image of Our Lady of Rosa Mystica and a few archangels. And one thing led to another, and I started creating holy cards with my photography. So I would go to churches, photograph stained glass windows, Catholic statues, and you know, anything I could see in a church that would make sense, and I would apply that to doing holy cards and things like that. Now I started making rosaries, and then the idea came to put my work into board games to help children and families to get closer to God, talk about their faith. So the story behind all these games that I'm creating is to strengthen the faith in the family.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Matt Lorenz, a board game designer, about his forthcoming games and his newest game coming out called Holy Quest. Tell us a little bit about Holy Quest. Describe how a person would play the game in general terms, and then we'll talk about how interested people could go ahead and find your game.
So the Holy Quest actually is based on religious orders, and it's kind of loosely based on a Hindu game called the Pachisi or Pakisi, however you want to pronounce it, which basically means that every player has four pawns on the board, and the idea is to get them into a safety zone or a finish line or whatever you want to call it. So I took that idea and I adopted it to become a Catholic game where every pawn in the game is a saint. And every saint is part of a religious order. So the game has the Franciscans, the Carmelites, Jesuits, and the Dominicans. And every one of those religious orders has four saints in it as you start the game. So the children are actually real saints in the game. The game is an educational game, so it has trivia clue cards that you can ask questions. When the players answer the question right, they move forward. If they get it wrong, they get penalized. And the goal of the game is to finish and get your saints into heaven. So right off the bat, the game teaches the children that it's a good thing to be a saint and that the goal of life is to get into heaven. So it's kind of touching on the eternal life that we're all seeking. And so that's the main idea behind the game, but there are many, many different twists and turns added to the game. There are action tiles. There are special moves that children can do. It's encouraged that the parents or grandparents can play with their children. And the game is designed in such a way that it spans many age groups, so you can have children from all the way from 5 years to late teens playing the game and having fun. And at the same time, learning about the faith, the saints, the religious orders, and things like that. And there are also many modes of playing the game. So there's an advanced mode, there's a teamwork play mode, and things like that. So the game like really never gets boring. And the idea is that, you know, if the children play once or twice, it's not going to get boring. They will still want to come back and play another time. And every time you play, it's different. So there is a very big factor that allows them to want to play the game over and over, or even ask their parents, "Hey, mom, dad, can we play the game?" You know, so that's the idea, and it's also to keep them away from the electronics these days. You know, so children don't use the cell phone or the internet so much and focus more on sitting at a table with their siblings, with the family, or even, you know, friends. Like if two families visit each other and they can play together. So that's the idea.
Wonderful. We've been talking today with Matt Lorenz about his new board game called Holy Quest. And I know you have other board games, memory games coming out about Marian apparitions as well. For people who want to find out more, perhaps to purchase your game, Holy Quest, what's the best website or other place that people can go?
So right now we are at the end of the design stage, so the game is not available for purchase directly at this moment. We're hoping that it will become available at places like the Amazon and other places at the end of the year. Right now, we're trying to raise the funds to produce the game. There is a fundraiser that is currently going on at Gifts and Go. And people can go to www.theholyquest.us. And if you go to that website, not only can you learn everything about the game and see what it's, how it's made and different components and pawns and parts in the box and in the game, we're also posting there any news, any progress, and things like that. And if anybody who donates to the game supports the project, so they make it possible to produce the game, but also we require a $120 donation, which is actually a purchase of the limited edition of the game. So there's only going to be 1,000 copies initially produced of a limited edition, which is going to have not only the 16 saints of the standard game, but it's going to have 16 additional saints. So children will get 32 saints in the game as a limited edition, which is only available to the first 1,000 donors who sign up for the game. So the idea is, you know, donate to the project, sign up or register for the game. There's a limit of 3 games per donor, and all that can be found out on the game website. And you can go from there, and if you wish to donate, then all the links and everything is on the website.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Matt Lawrence, for joining us on today's program, telling us about this new forthcoming game called Holy Quest. People can donate to fund that game and get copies of the game if they go to theholyquest.us. Thank you so much, Matt, for joining us on today's program, and we'll be excited to have you back on the show to give us an update on how this game progresses, and we hope great success for you and your game going forward. Thank you so much for being with us on today's program.
Thank you very much, Michael.
God bless. That was Matt Lawrence talking to us about his brand new board game called Holy Quest. So check that one out, theholyquest.us, for more information on how to donate to and acquire that game. And we'll keep our eyes open for another game about Marian apparitions coming out after that one. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Sister Marcia Hall, talking to us about the canonization cause of Venerable Mother Mary Lang, and also Matt Lawrence joining us to talk about his new board game called Holy Quest. Check out my television series Explore with the Miracle Hunter on June 29th, on Saturday at 6 p.m. Central Time. I'll be investigating a stunning Marian apparition in Belgium. 11-year-old Mariette Bako witnessed 8 visions of the Virgin of the Poor, who promised to intercede for the poor, sick, and suffering. Check that one out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.